My name is Samantha Bergen. I'm 49 years old, and today is July 16th, 2018. I'm recording this interview in West Hartford, Connecticut, and I'm speaking with Miriam Schreiber, who is my father's mother, and who I call Bubby. So, Bubby, can you tell us your name and your age?
My name is Miriam Schreiber, and I'm 86 years old, and I was born in Poland, in a small town near Warsaw.
What was the name of the town?
Długosiadło.
Okay. I'll look up the spelling later.
Yeah, you could do that. And I lived there until I was close to 6 years old when the war broke out in 1939.
Okay. And what did your father do?
My father was a merchant. He had a wholesale store. He was selling wheat and all kinds of grains. And we lived in the back of that store, you know, which was our house, you know, we owned it. And that's when one fateful moment when the Nazis marched in, all the securities and all the good things have ended for me. It was like life stopped at that moment.
Right.
Yes, and we tried to survive, you know, and kept going, and the Nazis marched in and they gave us an ultimatum, 24 hours to leave our homes and our towns. And we tried to go east further, you know, towards the Russian borders, you know. And my grandfather, who still was there in the town, hired one of the farmers that he knew with a horse and wagon, you know, to take us further east, you know, which dropped us off in middle of nowhere. And the weather was excruciating. It was raining and thundering and lightning, and he took off with our money, with everything, and he left us there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you weren't in a town, you were just on the side of the road?
We were in middle of nowhere, in the fields, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And other people tried to help us, you know, because my mother was like 28 years old, and we were four children,
mm-hmm.
you know, me and my two older sisters and my youngest sister,
mm-hmm.
you know. So strange people, you know, were helping us, and we kept, you know, going, you know, and we had a great-great-grandmother with us, who my sister was, you know, lugging her all along, you know, until we got to the town, until we got to the border.
Mm-hmm.
And at the borders, they wouldn't let us in, and we stayed there for weeks, you know. And it was already getting cold and winter, and we didn't have any warm clothes and nothing.
Can I interrupt? Because I have so many questions.
Go ahead.
So your grandfather had paid for the journey. Did he go with you?
No, he stayed back.
Do you know what happened to him?
They got killed, you know. Because when we were still in town, they rounded up all the pious people. My grandfather was one of them. And the marketplace, and they shaved them off half of the beards, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we watched, you know, how they shaved off the half of the beard with the skin, and all the blood was running down on his shirt, you know, and the blood was just running all over the people, you know.
And you were 6 years old.
And I was 6 years old, and they made us watch.
Wow.
They made us watch, you know. Yeah, and so it was horrible. And
yeah.
He stayed back, you know, because one of my aunts was pregnant with twins.
Mm-hmm.
And she was to give birth, I guess, you know, within weeks, you know, so he couldn't leave.
And she couldn't travel.
And she couldn't travel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we heard, you know, when we were already at the borders, you know, people were going in different directions, you know. One was coming, one was going. It was a mayhem, mm-hmm. you know. So we heard that the Nazis killed the two babies.
Oh.
They threw them in the air and they shot at them, like when you shoot birds.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they did. I don't know if you want to hear a lot more.
Well, I do.
That's what they did. And the rest of the family, you know, they stayed back and they never survived. Nobody survived. Nobody. Not even one person. One of my cousins that came with us, he was 16 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he was holding on to somebody, also a member of the family, and somebody told him that his mother, you know, has been killed, you know, so he went back.
Oh no.
He went back and he never came, we never saw him again. No, we never saw him, we never heard. So nobody survived. On my side of the family, whoever stayed back, nobody survived.
Right.
No. So that's it. And then we stayed at the borders, you know, and the cold and the snow, it was so freezing and we were wet.
Mm.
And
Were you staying? Did you have a tent or any kind of?
No, outside.
Yeah.
Outside in the freezing frost and the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, you know, in the bushes, you know. And every 5 minutes you heard the shots, the firings, you know, that the Russians were firing at us because they wouldn't let us in, mm-hmm. you know. So at one point, you know, I think it must have been already December, that they opened the borders, you know, for a couple of hours, and they let the people in. So we got into a town called Bialystok.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, my great-grandmother, you know, great-great-grandmother was, I think, my father's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And she lay down on the bench and she died, you know,
oh my
right
God.
There, you know. And so one of the synagogues, you know, in Bialystok, they opened up the door for us and they let us in, not upstairs in the sanctuary, but downstairs in the cellar. And they put in benches and we slept on the benches, and the rats and the mice were crawling at us, you know, the whole night long.
Were they hiding you there, or they just didn't have any place?
They just didn't want us upstairs. They didn't, I don't know if they didn't have room or they just didn't want, they called us the runaways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We ran away, you know, the bezhenik, as they called us. And there was misery, wall-to-wall misery, you know. And we stayed there, and then they opened up, you know, like it was already winter time, so the summer resort places were closed already,
mm-hmm.
for the people that lived there, you know. So they opened up for us, for the people that ran from Poland, and they let us in there, and they had a registration one day, and my mother, you know, they registered people, you know, do you want to go to Russia or you want to go back to Poland? So my mother said, no, I want to go back to Poland. I want to go back home, because she did have her father there and her sisters, which she thought they still alive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever wanted to go back to Poland, the Russians considered them as traitors.
Jeez.
As national traitors, traitors to their country,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't want to go to Russia.
Right.
So one night, they in middle of the night, we hear a knock on the door, you know, and there was the NKVD, you know, the secret police with their bayonets, with their rifles and mm-hmm. bayonets, you know, sticking up, and they said, get out, you know. So they put us in trucks, you know, open trucks,
mm-hmm.
and they took us, you know, further into Russia. And we didn't know where we were going.
And it's still winter time.
And it's still winter time, you know. It's still cold and freezing, and the winters were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't have any belongings with you, right?
Nothing. We didn't have nothing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. My mother had a Karakul coat, mm-hmm. you know, one of the coats, you know, that she was holding on because her father put money in the hem, you know, in the hemline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in case we needed to survive, you know. So anyway, so she was holding on to that, you know. And they packed us up in those open trucks, you know. And every half hour, somebody was fainting, you know, or dying, you know, from the exhaust pipes, you know,
mm-hmm.
from the fume. They got asphyxiated from that. And they just threw him off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to walk over a dead person was like nothing. We just walked over and kept going.
Yeah.
You know, it was just horrible. So I don't know at what point we got there in Russia, because I'm still a child, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, you know, a lot of the things. So they brought us to a station,
mm-hmm.
and they packed us in, you know, and there are hundreds of people into wagons, you know, cattle carts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there was nothing there, you know, there was no facilities, no water, no nothing. They treated us like animals. And the journey began towards Siberia.
Yeah.
You know, and we were going and going and going and going. You couldn't see the end of the train. If you looked out, you know, if the windows were like slits, you know,
mm-hmm.
one in one side and one in the other side, you know, and the facilities were, you know, if somebody had to go, you know, to the bathroom, somebody stood in front of the person.
Yeah.
And they just went, you know, they dug holes in the floor,
mm-hmm.
and they just went, you know. It was just horrible, you know. And then it was so many weeks that we were on this train.
They must have fed you. Was it just bread? Or
they just threw in, you know, bread, you know, bread in soup that it looks like water, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it took maybe 4 to 6 weeks that we were on that train,
mm-hmm.
until we got to a point where they took us on barges, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we were going on the barges, you know, for weeks, you know. It was like ice cutters, you know, because
yeah.
the sea was frozen, you know, and by the time we got to Siberia, it took maybe 2 months.
Did they tell you where you were going?
No, nobody knew where we were going. Everybody was asking, where are we going? Where are they taking us? You know.
Were there any people from your town?
No. Oh, yes, one cousin and the family
mm-hmm.
were from our town, actually. And she now lives in New Jersey.
Wow.
Hayale, my mm-hmm. cousin,
yeah.
you know. And she survived. And her father and her brother, they both died in Siberia.
Mm.
Yeah. So once we got there, you know, so we were just my mother and the four kids and my father's father, my grandfather. My grandfather was a amputee, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One arm, he had to be amputated.
When did that happen?
That was in the late 20s. I don't know when that happened.
Before you were born?
Before I was born, mm-hmm. Yes. As far as I can remember, he always had one arm, mm-hmm. You know.
And this is not the grandfather who'd paid for the journey, right?
The one that paid for the journey was my mother's father.
Mm-hmm.
This was my father's father. So anyway, so when we finally got to Siberia, the camp, it was like the end of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing anymore there. Nothing. It was woods, snow,
mm-hmm.
and wolves.
Did you see wolves?
Oh, we saw wolves every day, every night. You know, they would come. The housing was constructed, you know, like one log on top of the other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, you could see the frost.
Yeah.
You know, the frost on the inside and the frost on the outside, mm-hmm. You know.
Like old-fashioned log cabin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in every cabin like that, there was four families. Every corner had a family,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Did you have beds? Did you have blankets?
No, on the ground, on the floor, I don't know what they had, you know. It looks like straw or mm-hmm. something like that, you know. And this is how we slept, and we kept close to one another to keep warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
Did families help each other out?
Whatever they could, yes. And there was no water, no nothing. The water was snow.
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to go outside, bring in a bucket of snow, and melt it on that little stove that there was in the middle of the room, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the one pipe stove going through the roof, you know. And that was the water. We were drinking that water. And they made her work. They made her go to work, you know, and underground places where they kept, you know, well, once a year they brought in the supplies, you know, like potatoes mm-hmm. and grains and whatever.
Like a storeroom.
Like a storage mm-hmm. place. And it was underground because it was warmer
mm-hmm.
down there. So if they caught her stealing a rotten potato, because that's what they made her do,
mm-hmm.
To pick the good potatoes, keep away from the rotten ones.
Yeah.
And if she got caught stealing a rotten potato, she would put it in her socks or whatever, you know, she was wearing, you know. She would get punished for that.
Mm-hmm.
They would always punish you for that. You were not allowed to touch anything.
How did they punish her?
They would not give her the bread, the ration, you know, whatever, you know. I still don't remember, you know, how mm-hmm. we survived, you know.
Right.
And you were asking me if I saw wolves. At night, they were coming close to the places,
mm-hmm.
and they would howl, you know, all the time, you know, because they were hungry too.
Right.
You know, they were looking for somebody, you know, to get them, you know. And one day my grandfather said, you know, don't give me any more the piece of bread. Save it for the children, he said to my mother.
Mm.
Save it for the children, you know, because I'm not going to survive, you know.
Yeah.
And he died. I was laying next to him. He was dead for 2 days. We couldn't bury him. because we had nobody to help us to bury him, because the four families that were in the in that room were women and children, you know. There was no man, nobody.
And I'm sure the ground...
The ground was so frozen that when we finally got somebody to take him out, you know, he said, no, give the bread to the kids because I'm not going to survive.
Yeah.
And he was like 56 years old. Don't forget, you know, they in those days they were married young and they had kids young. And so he was laying next to me for 2 days until they were able to take him out, you know, a couple of guys, younger guys. And they couldn't dig the ground, so they just pushed the snow away, you know.
Yeah.
And put him underneath the snow. And what happens at night, probably the wolves got to him.
Right.
So we lost him, you know.
Where was your father? Was he working?
He was not with us. He was in the Polish army at the time when the war broke out, you know. And the army then left. The Polish army was over with in 2 weeks, you know, because you know they couldn't fight with horses towards machines that the Germans had. They had all the modern equipment already. How could they fight with horses and just plain rifles?
Right.
How could they work against machines like that?
So your father was gone before...
My father was gone, yes. Mm-hmm. He was in the military. But when the military fell apart, he took off his uniform, and he was stationed near Warsaw. And his sisters lived in Warsaw, both of them. And so he went in there, you know, somehow, you know, avoiding the Nazis, avoiding the Germans. And he changed, and they wanted him to stay with them, you know. Where you gonna go? It's everything is burning. It's a fire. You know, where you going? You're not gonna make it to the hometown.
Right.
So he says, no, I gotta go. I have to find my wife and children. You know, so he left. And along the way, he got stopped, you know, a couple of times, you know, by Germans. And he was lucky enough, they gave him a few, over his head. They beat him up, you know, and they told him, get out of here, you know.
Yeah.
And he kept going, you know. When he got to our town, we were not there already. So here we are. We are in Siberia all alone.
Right. So what did he do? Because wasn't he
so my grandfather,
reunited?
You know, who was still barely alive, you know, said they killed the twins, you know, and both his daughters were shot to death, and he was barely so he said I'm taking you with me. So he says, no, you go. I'm as good as dead, you know. So he came looking, the Russians arrested him at the border, and they sent him off to Finland.
Finland?
To Finland, to Arkhangelsk. And they made him, they did not put him in the army, you know, because he was still a Polish citizen, he was a traitor. You know, so they were afraid that he's going to trade them, you know. So they sent them off. It was called the Trudovoy Front, and the back of the front, you know. You cannot be in the at the top, you know. Right. You have to be in the back somewhere. So anyway, but like I said, people were going and coming. The only correspondence that you were able to get is through people, you know. One was going east, one was going west. It was a horrible thing. But from Siberia, nobody could get out anymore.
Right.
We were in a camp, and we were with barbed wires, mm-hmm. with a tower, you know, and one of the posts, you know, the guy was there 24 hours, you know, they were changing, I guess, and they were watching us.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they think we're going to escape from there?
Right, you don't know where you are, there's no town.
There's nothing. If you go into the woods, that's it. It's the end of you.
Right, the wolves are there.
The wolf will get you, yes. Yeah. So this is how we stayed there for 3 years. And then somehow our father found his way to Siberia.
Oh my God.
Yes.
What was that like, seeing him for the first time in years?
You have no idea. You have no idea how it was.
Hmm.
And we don't know how he found us, how he got there. But he got there. And they did not liberate us from there until 1946. We were completely forgotten. We were in the northern part of Siberia. It was called Komi SSR, you know, Komi SSR. Mm-hmm. This was almost where the, it's probably closer to China and Tibet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Himalayan mountain or something, you know, I don't know what it was there, you know.
And probably nobody knew that they were holding people there.
Nobody knew.
Mm.
And until the Polish, you know, army was found, and they were working from Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Anders Army, the Anders.
Anders?
Anders, yeah, was his last name.
Okay.
And he was working on the behalf of all the Polish citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And he demanded that all Polish citizens be freed from all the camps, wherever they are. And this is when we got out, when we got the permission. The people that were there in that place where we were, they were, most of them were gulags,
mm-hmm.
and the Tatars, you know.
Yep.
They were the nomads people or whatever they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And the gulags would say to us, "This from here, nobody gets out alive. Get it through your heads, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're here until you die, you know." So this was we lived, you know, like from day to day.
Yeah.
With no future, with no prospects of getting out of there, you know. Until one fateful morning we get the permission to leave from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us the same amount of time to get out of there, you know. And we got out of there, it was like we started out like in February.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get to the first station in Poland, which was open. In Polish it was called Opole, you know, open in Germany, mm-hmm. because that area was always changing.
Mm-hmm.
Poland and between Poland and Germany and Poland.
Right.
It was going back and forth. So the first station that we arrived was in May in 1946, and that was the first stop in Poland.
So did people from the army come to take you, or just the doors were thrown open?
I don't know how it happened,
mm.
but they just put us on the trains, and mm-hmm. you know, and they took us towards Poland, you know.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. then you get off the train.
And we get off the train, we are in Poland.
And then you have no place to go.
And then what? No place to go. We have no homes to go to. Mm-hmm. We wanted to go back to Poland, and the people said, you know, to our town, and the people said, don't go. There is pogroms, wall-to-wall pogroms. They were still killing Jewish people.
Jeez.
They were still killing Jewish people. Mm. And there was a pogrom in one of the towns that they killed hundreds of people, of Jewish people, survivors.
Yeah.
And that was the Polish people did that already. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So why would you want to go back to Poland?
Who wants to go back? Yeah. Who said? We didn't want to go back. No. My father wanted to go back, and he wanted to see if there's anything left, you know, of the house, of the business, of the, because no relatives survived, you know.
Right.
And so my mother said, no, you're not going. Mm-hmm. Because we got to the train, we did get to the train, and there was a bunch of Polacks, you know, and they said, oh, look at this, there's Jews that survived. They don't know what we're going to do to them in Polish once they get on the train. So my father said, no, I'm not going. That's it. So we didn't go.
Yeah.
So we ended up, you know, after the war in DP camps.
Mm-hmm. And where was the first DP camp that you ended?
The first DP camp was actually in Austria, in Salzburg. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we got there. And they were already a bunch of emissaries from Israel, then Palestine. Mm-hmm. And they saw to us that we get, you know, sleeping areas and food and mess halls, you know. And the sleeping areas, the conditions were, you know, like, it was like military barracks, you know, that they put us in there, and that was the first camp, the first displaced persons camp.
Now, did you go there specifically, like you knew where you were going, or somebody just picked you up and said, hey, let's...
somebody, they were just taking us, yes.
Hmm.
Yes, and from Austria, they took us illegally, you know, through the border, through... Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we stayed in Prague for a couple of days. And from Prague to Germany. So that was, it was a long journey. It was, you cannot put it into one book. Or this is just, you know, a couple of things that I remember. Don't forget, it's 6 years.
I have about 1,000 questions for every minute you've been talking.
Okay.
But okay. I know we can't get through all that.
Yeah. All right. One first question.
Oh, first. So it was in the German DP camp that you met Zadie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was in Hofgeismar that I met Zadie. And I was, by then I was already, you know, like 13 years old. And I was holding my little sister. I don't know how she survived. I cannot tell you how she survived. But I was holding my sister, and I was trying to create a bed for her. So I took two chairs. He was there already, you know. He came there months before us, you know, he came because he got liberated in Austria. And I was, and it was in a mess hall.
Yeah.
You know, where people were coming in to eat, you know. So I took away two chairs from the long tables, you know, there were long tables all across. And I was trying to create a bed for her to sleep, and he told me that I cannot do it because people were coming in to eat. He was like 17 years old already. And so I said, what do you mean I cannot do it? My sister needs to lie down to sleep, you know.
Yeah.
would see kids were taking care of kids, you
right.
know. And so he said, no, you cannot take those chairs. He says, you want to see wearing them? If I cannot take them, you know, you're going to wear them on your head, you know. And so I, so from there on, you know, he says, oh, I think I'm dealing with the right person here.
A girl who can take care of herself.
Yeah. So he says, I think I have somebody here on my hand that really knows her way around, you know. I mean, circumstances, survival, you know, teaches you. Life in itself teaches you. It's a way of surviving.
Okay. I'm going to wrap this up because
I
have to.
Because I have to also.
But we can continue talking later.
Yeah.
But
anyways, and then when we started going out and when he told me that he has nobody.
Yeah.
And the way he survived, you know, it was, I mean, my mother took him in, you know, so says, okay, I have 5 children and I'll have 6 children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why he left my parents.
Yeah. Well, I remember he said that his own mother took in
2 extra children,
said, if I can feed 10, 12. I can feed 12. Or
if I can feed 12, I can feed 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do for people.
Yeah, that's what you do. And I'm thankful to God that my family picked up that trade.
Yeah.
That they're willing to help other people.
And I'm thankful that you and Zadie found each other and survived.
Yeah. We had turbulent life. You know, we had the... It wasn't always, you know, hutsy-tutsy. It was... But it was a way of survival, you know.
Yeah.
We never worked against each other. We always pulled together, you know. We always worked together.
Yeah.
And we kept saying to ourselves, we're survivors. We have to do it.
Yeah.
We have to do it. We have no other choice. We're coming to... All those years that we were in this place, camps, and all those years that we were traveling, we never had accumulated anything, you know, in one place, because we never stayed long enough to have anything to call our, that it belonged to me. That's why Zadie loved this house so much.
Yeah.
He didn't want to go on vacation. He didn't want to do anything. He didn't. I love it. It's mine. I worked. I earned it. It was his palace.
Yeah.
It was. Yes. And I'm trying to keep it up. I'm trying to follow in his wishes, you know. And it's a miracle. It's not one miracle. It's a million miracles. I cannot put it into words. I cannot put it into a book. I cannot. It is probably more than 2 movies to be made.
Yeah.
You know. And so, but Zadie was, you know, I was his life.
I know.
And I have to say, he was my life. You know. We clung to one another. We stayed in Germany. We lived in Israel. I had to leave Israel because the climate was not agreeing with me. He served in the military, and I was in treatment all the time.
Oh.
I was losing calcium.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I was losing calcium in my body all the time. And every week I needed to go for calcium shots, you know. And they took like a half an hour to do the calcium shot, because you have to you have to let the calcium go in, the medication, and you have to stop. You have to stop, you have to keep going. It took like a half an hour to do one injection because your body would get hot from the calcium. Yes, and so the doctor said the only way that you're going to make it here is if you go up north, to live up north. So up north was the Galilee or Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't afford to go to neither place, you know.
Right.
There's no way we could get any apartments in any of those places, you know. Because we didn't have any money. We didn't have anything, you know, to go to Jerusalem to live. You needed to buy an apartment, you know. And we didn't have the money. And there was no rentals in those days. Now they have big apartment houses. So, and you couldn't find a job, so we decided to go back to Germany.
Right. I'm going to need to start wrapping up.
Okay.
All right. Okay. But I want to continue the conversation after the recording.
Okay.
But there's only a few minutes left, so.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, first off, I need a tissue, but I'll get it later.
Yeah.
But thank you for telling me all of this and opening up.
You're my granddaughter.
Yeah. But I hope that other people listen to this and learn a little something.
They do.
Yeah. All right.
They do.
All right. Thank you.
They do now. They didn't in those days.
And I'm really glad that you survived and found Zadie.
Thank you.
And have this whole family.
Thank you, yes.
All right.
Yes. This whole family, and I'm very proud of you.